Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, we're going to open up reminding you about the 15th annual Swim Across America Fairfield County. This open water swim is scheduled for Sunday, August 8th in Long Island Sound, and we'll be encouraging all swimmers, boaters, kayakers, and anyone interested in being on land volunteers to participate in this inspiring and amazing day as we talk with one of the 2021 co-chairs of this huge annual fundraiser for the Connecticut-based Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy. Then we're going to check in with a researcher and community educator from the Yale School of Medicine Substance Abuse Center to talk about vaping and e-cigarettes and a pair of paid research studies with cigarette smokers to better understand the appeal and use of e-cigarettes and other tobacco products. And we're going to close circling back to get the latest news from Your Community Cares, a nonprofit organization serving all of Connecticut with an online platform matching volunteers with seniors or disabled members in the community seeking much needed assistance. They're there in your neighborhood, so check it out and see how you can participate. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. The deadline is coming. Yep, AARP is accepting nominations for their 2021 Connecticut Andrus Award for Community Service that honors an outstanding volunteer in the state who is sharing their experience, talent, and skills to enrich the lives of their community members. Do you know an extraordinary volunteer age 50 or over who should receive AARP's most prestigious Connecticut Volunteer Award? Well, the deadline is coming up fast. It's August 1st, so nominate them now. And don't forget, in addition to honoring the winner, AARP Connecticut will donate $3,000 on behalf of the Andrus Award winner to an eligible nonprofit organization of their choosing. You want to learn more? Get that nomination in by August 1st. Just go to AARP.org and put the word Andrus, that's A-N-D-R-U-S, in the search box. Well, we're opening things up, as we promised, with our guest, Nancy Carr, who is co-chair of Swim Across America Fairfield County, which is celebrating its 15th year in Fairfield County. This year's swim is going to be held on Sunday, August 8th. So the date is growing close, Nancy. How's everything going so far?
Hi, John. Thanks so much for having me today. It is going great. We are so excited that for our 15th anniversary year, we do get to be back in the water. You know, last year was a tough year for everybody. Cancer did not stop because of a pandemic. So we are just really excited that in just a couple of weeks, we're going to have a couple hundred people back in the water and swimming to raise money for cancer research.
Well, folks who may not be really tight with the cause or the organization of the swim may have heard over the years various beneficiaries, and I'm really excited that the beneficiary now is the Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy. We've had the pleasure of having them on our program talking about some of the important work they're doing, and man, it is as much as it sounds like science fiction, these folks are helping cure breast cancer and other forms of cancer. They're doing incredible work there. Tell us your impressions about the Alliance.
Yeah, you know, John, you are absolutely right. Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy is our beneficiary, and we have raised in the past 14 years $4.3 million that we have donated to Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy. And you know what? The cell and gene therapies are where the breakthroughs are happening. And this is where the doctors and scientists are continuing to develop safer and more effective treatments. And we all believe this is where the cure is going to be found. We are currently at Swim Across America Fairfield County funding three researchers through Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy. C.D. Chen, who is researching pancreatic cancer as an assistant professor at Yale University School of Medicine. Stephen Gottschalk at St. Jude's, who's chair of the bone marrow transplantation and cellular therapy at St. Jude. And also Noriyuki Kasahara, who is studying glioblastoma or brain cancer as a principal investigator at the Brain Tumor Center at UC San Francisco. So Alliance in Cancer Gene Therapy really finds the brightest and best out there, really just stellar researchers in their fields that are helping us to find ways to, you know, to treat and to hopefully cure cancer.
So this, as we said, the swim is coming up on Sunday, August 8th, and you are seeking both folks to go in the water, to be on the water, but also you need a legion of folks who are going to be working on land as well. Let's talk about those volunteer opportunities, starting with kind of the some of the stars of the event, the ones who are actually going to be swimming. What do folks need to know if they are capable swimmers and maybe thinking about getting into something of what is way more than a marathon might be for runners, I guess, right?
Well, yes and no. So the first thing to say is this is absolutely not a race. This is a swim, and it is a fun swim. It's an easy course. It's all about raising money for cancer research. So if you people want to participate in the swim, it's right in Long Island Sound. You know, we're not going to hopefully be looking at any waves or anything like that. We have half mile, 1.5 mile, and 3 mile options. So whatever your swim level, you should be able to be really comfortable out there. And we also have people who volunteer to be swim angels. So these are sometimes our Olympians, sometimes just really strong swimmers who are there to swim alongside those who might be a little bit more apprehensive about swimming in open water. Mm-hmm. But it's a very fun, very safe event. And you mentioned opportunities for volunteers. We have people out on stand-up paddle boards and in kayaks, just helping to keep our swimmers safe and to keep them comfortable, to cheer them on. So anybody really that can swim can participate.
And what are some of the things that the folks who are not in or on the water can do for this great cause?
So we have a legion of land volunteers. I actually started myself as a land volunteer back in 2016. You know, as you can imagine, it takes a lot of people to put on an event like this. And anybody who is interested in participating can register on our website at swimacrossamerica.org/FC, that's /FC for Fairfield County, and register as a land volunteer. It's an early call. We usually get there about 6 o'clock in the morning, but you're out before noon and getting on with your day. And it's just so much fun. I personally was hooked after my first year. That's how I'm still here this many years later.
And you really have a need for, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 volunteers, because there are tend to be a lot of participants. And I imagine having a year off, a lot of people were spending their downtime maybe prodding or teasing some of their other friends or loved ones to swim along with them once this whole thing got started again.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right, John. I think there's a lot of pent-up demand. People are really excited to get back outside and to get back in the water. And we have a need for as many volunteers as want to show up. We will find a place for you. We will make sure that this is a meaningful experience for you. And it's really just tremendous. Even if you just want to come down and cheer on the swimmers, it's an event that you have to be part of and experience to really get a picture for it.
And what are the locations where people are actually doing the swimming?
So the swim, we are really, really lucky that the swim is on the border of Old Greenwich at Stanford at the headquarters of our beneficiary, Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy. And we're really lucky to have this venue, this little piece of water that stretches from Dolphin Cove in Stanford to Todd's Point in Old Greenwich.
Fantastic. And you are going to have a number of esteemed guests and others who are going to be participating, not just folks who have swum every year or those who may be bringing their children or their parents or their grandparents. I mean, we're at the point where you probably could stand to have three generations of family members swimming together on behalf of or in the name of or in honor of a loved one who was a survivor or who may have lost their fight. But we wanted to talk a little bit about Vicky Bunky. Tell us a little bit about her.
Vicky is, like a lot of moms, just one of those, just an amazing, amazing person. Vicky is from Atlanta, and she is swimming in 14 open water swims this summer. So when I say 14 open water swims, Swim Across America is a national organization. We here at Swim Across America Fairfield County are one of 21 swims. So Vicky is swimming in 14, and she is doing that in honor of her daughter, Grace, who she lost in 2018 to pediatric sarcoma. And she is going to be one of the guest speakers at our swim on August 8th.
Okay. And also, we really should spend a couple of minutes talking about Christy, your co-chair.
Yes, absolutely. So Christy Fraser is my co-chair. And it was actually in 2016 when her son Julian was diagnosed, like Grace, with osteosarcoma, that I became a volunteer. And sadly, Julian, like Grace, did lose his life. And one of our largest teams is Team Julian. And they it's just whether it's young people, their parents. I mean, there's an entire community that has rallied behind the Fraser family. Really just a tremendous effort to remember Julian and to swim in his honor and in his memory.
Mm-hmm. And Nancy, you brought up a really important point that we didn't touch upon yet, but I guess we could. As we air this on the 25th of July, there's still a couple weeks left for people to get involved. It's certainly not too late for individuals to sign up or volunteers to come on board, but there's also still enough time for teams to organize to really put the power of fundraising for this event to their to best advantage. You've got some pretty incredible groups of swimmers that are all jumping in and diving in together.
John, you are absolutely right. It is not too late. We actually allow people to register up to 48 hours before the event, but obviously we want people to register as soon as they can and to start fundraising because, you know, after all, that's what it's all about. We have people who have formed teams through their company. They've formed teams with their friends. They've formed teams from their schools. We have, you know, high school teams that participate. We have swim programs like Chelsea Piers in Connecticut that is coming out and bringing swimmers to the swim. So anybody who wants to participate, who wants to donate, these dollars will make a difference in the fight against cancer. And that's what it's all about. And anybody who's interested can register at swimacrossamerica.org/FC.
So in excess of 300 swimmers are expected, and the need for at least 100 volunteers, including those who might be on their paddle boards or in kayaks or in boats or swimming alongside those who are doing the fundraising, are being sought right now. Once again, swimacrossamerica.org/FC is where you go. The main event is coming up on Sunday, August 8th. So if you're not in the mood or unable able to actually participate or volunteer, you could certainly save the date and come out and cheer on those who are, because it's really, while it's a serious cause, it really is sort of a fun and inspiring atmosphere. And we really want to thank the Fairfield County co-chair, Nancy Carr, for being part of the program here this morning for the Swim Across America Fairfield County. They're in their 15th year, once again, happening on Sunday, August 8th, at the Greenwich-Stanford border, at the Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy, the recipient of the proceeds from this swim event. Whether you are willing to swim a half mile, 1.5 miles, or 3 miles, or join and support those swimmers, they're happy to have you. Once again, it's swimacrossamerica.org/FC. And we want to thank you, Nancy Carr, for your work all these years in promoting this event. And we'll see you at the swim. Thanks. Well, we're so pleased to be returning to the subject of what makes tobacco and tobacco products so compelling, so addicting. And regular listeners may remember a few weeks ago, we talked to a couple of authorities on how tobacco companies are and have been for so many years insidiously designing advertising programs and are looking for new ways and developing new ways to attract and bring younger women smokers and people of color into the world of tobacco use. And now we're going to get into talking a little bit about actually what kind of goes on in your head and your body that might make tobacco products and the consumption of them so addicting. Actually, talking to a research assistant who's going to appeal to tobacco users to get involved in a set of studies that's going on right now. We're so pleased to welcome to the program Tricia Dahl. She's a research assistant and psychiatry grand rounds coordinator, also a community educator on the dangers of vaping with the Yale School of Medicine Substance Abuse Center. So Tricia, thanks for joining us. This is a subject we've sadly been talking about on this program for almost 3 decades, and it just seems like every time we're about to turn the corner on actually mitigating or reducing the attraction of tobacco products, the industry comes up with a whole bunch of new ideas that really work very effectively. So kudos to you and your team at Yale for working so hard to try to get to the bottom of it, because I guess when you attack the core root of what makes tobacco products addictive, you're half the distance toward being able to eliminate that addiction.
Right. And thank you for having me. This is a super important topic to continue to discuss. And it does affect so many lives. And unfortunately, many people don't understand just how deeply it's affecting their lives and their bodies.
Well, tell us more about yourself and your team over there at Yale.
So, as you had mentioned, I am part of a research team in the Department of Psychiatry at Yale School of Medicine. We currently are running some paid research studies with cigarette smokers. We conduct these research studies through the Yale Tobacco Center on Regulatory Sciences, and these are all funded by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the National Institute of Health. And we're hoping to understand the appeal and the use of e-cigarettes and other tobacco products.
Now, I imagine this is nowhere near the first couple of studies that your organization has done. Have there been others?
Yes, we are actually in our 7th year. So we've completed 5 years of research on this, and now we're on our second 5-year grant and into it 2 years.
Can you help our listeners understand a little bit about the cause and effect of the work that you're doing and some of the results, hopefully positive ones, that you've been able to actually develop out of these research studies that you've done before?
Sure. So the goal has always been to help us to understand all of this a little bit better. These last two research studies that we have done have been focusing more on the flavors and how these flavors are increasing the appeal of nicotine-containing e-cigarettes. So we're hoping that with the data that we collect, these studies will ultimately help lawmakers understand and decide what types of flavors may help people stop smoking cigarettes and what flavors just really aren't helpful at all. All flavors except for a menthol flavor have been banned since 2009 in cigarettes and in many other tobacco products. But e-cigarettes and vapes, there are over 15,000 different flavors, which is very concerning. Some of these flavors are, as we've all heard, highly appealing to youth and are often the reason why youth try these tobacco products. So although we know they can be very dangerous, we also know that these flavors could also play a role in helping cigarette smokers switch to e-cigarettes done properly.
So it's a kind of a double-edged sword here because there is a functional benefit of e-cigarettes for those who may be predisposed to be able to use them to wean off of smoked tobacco, but at the same time, the industry isn't just looking for folks wanting to switch or transition. They're looking to apparently really throw their net out to the huge and untapped customer base of our youths.
Absolutely. And we have found that most of the adolescents that we do work with in different research studies that we have never tried a cigarette before, but yet they're using e-cigarettes regularly.
And the action to ban a lot of these flavors doesn't really seem to be stopping the industry in their efforts to reach out and appeal to this vast audience of younger consumers or those who have not consumed tobacco products before.
Absolutely. And we, as much as we try and catch up with all of the technology and the devices that are out there, the industry is quite wise and they find new products that can kind of slip under the radar. So it's been a constant struggle, constant battle, but if we have this data and we can eliminate most of the flavors that are causing the initiation from our youth, we're hoping that maybe it won't be quite as attractive.
Mm. You mentioned something really important there, Tricia, and that is devices. The range of delivery mechanisms for the e-cigarette contents has kind of reached a fever pitch, and so many of these devices are getting so much smaller, concealable, or are sort of masking themselves by looking like other types of items that a young person or a product consumer might have anyway, right?
They are. And the newest generation, if you will, of these devices that are mostly attractive to kids are the disposable pod-style devices. So when this first became an issue or a bigger issue with our kids, it was more with the Juul and those type of pod devices that deliver extremely high levels of nicotine with a very small amount. And with the Juul, it was a little bit more pricey, and there were different forms of evidence, if you will, that kids were using. So there are pods or there are chargers. Well, now these new disposable pod-style devices still deliver the same amount of nicotine, but it's much cheaper, roughly maybe $5. And there's no charging devices, there's no pods, there's no refillable cartridges. So they can just toss it if they are worried about getting caught. It's easy to leave behind somewhere. So kids were finding them on buses, so they don't have to bring them in the school, but they can vape when they were on the bus, and $5 wasn't a big deal for them. So
plus it puts these devices out there. I mean, the ones that are discarded but still usable can just be picked up by someone unknowing, and while that probably represents a very small fraction of the people that might start consuming tobacco products through these vaping devices, it still also poses a risk in and of itself that these products are disposed of out on school grounds and parks or other places where other young people might pick them up and want to experiment with them.
You're right. Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, Tricia Dahl is with us. She's a research assistant and a community educator on the dangers of vaping. I'm sure you got that message loud and clear up to now. She is with the Yale School of Medicine Substance Abuse Center. We're going to take a quick break and come back and call on tobacco users to be part of a pair of brand new studies that are going on right now. You'll get a little compensation for it, but more importantly, you may help the team at the Yale School of Medicine Substance Abuse Center learn a little bit more about why these products are so appealing with an eye on trying to reduce their consumption. Tricia, stay with us and we'll be right back. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. If your driveway needs paving or repairs, don't trust just anyone to do the job. BBB's scam tracker has numerous reports of unscrupulous contractors who trick homeowners with supposedly good deals. Homeowners can end up with shoddy pavement or nothing at all to show for what they paid, and in some cases, they've lost over $8,000 in the process. To avoid falling victim, visit BBB.org for tips on what to look for and what to look out for when a paving scammer comes knocking. And if you suspect you've fallen for a contractor scam, report it to BBB.org/scam tracker. We're back with Tricia Dahl, a senior research assistant for the Yale School of Medicine Substance Abuse Center. And we spent the first half of the program talking a little bit more and tapping her, picking her brain, I should say, as a community educator on the dangers of vaping. But let's turn to the main thrust of our balance of our program here, and that is aligning and assigning people to the cause to try to help figure out why these products are so appealing with an eye on mitigating their use in society, especially with younger consumers. Tricia, tell us more about these new studies that you're seeking subjects for.
Great, thank you. So we are looking for cigarette smokers who have tried e-cigarettes to call us or fill out an online form at www.yalevapestudy.com. And then we can see if they might be eligible for any of our studies. If we think someone might be eligible, we ask them to participate in a virtual visit to collect more information. And of course, all of the information is confidential. Participation in these studies consists of 3 to 4 paid visits that range from 1 to 2.5 hours. If they're eligible, they'll come to our lab, try e-cigarettes that we provide, which contain nicotine and different types of flavors, to understand what they like and dislike about them. the e-cigarettes contain nicotine and flavors, but they are all devices that are commercially available products and are tested in our lab prior to use. The study does not involve any medications or blood draws. Again, those interested should fill out an online form at www.yalevapestudy.com, or they can call or text us at 203-605-5803.
And those who are accepted in the studies need to be able to participate on some sort of schedule by coming to visit with you and your team?
Yes. So all of our studies pass the virtual initial appointment, take place at the Yale School of Medicine campus in New Haven. If transportation is an issue, we can certainly provide cab or Uber. We try and schedule it around the individual's schedule. So if there are certain dates or times that are more convenient, then we try and accommodate those.
And the participants you're looking for are those who in some way, shape, or form have begun consuming some sort of e-cigarettes?
Yes, certainly. We definitely want people who are already smoking cigarettes and have tried e-cigarettes or vape. We also need people who are healthy, over 21 years old, 21 or older, I should say, English speaking, and don't have any severe medical conditions like heart problems or cancer. So if this sounds like any of your listeners, they can go on again to www.yalevapestudy.com or call us at 203-605-5803. Again, there is a portion of our studies that does require in-person visits in New Haven, but we can assist with that transportation if it is a problem.
And what are the benefits that the subjects might enjoy aside from the eventual knowledge that they participated in an activity that could help both them and others that they love kick the habit?
So they can earn up to $550 to participate in our research study. And the reason we have to say up to is because obviously if you don't attend all the appointments, you can't get paid for those. So providing they attend all of their appointments, they can get $550 just for filling out our online form to see if they're eligible. They'll be entered into a monthly $50 raffle. And more importantly, at least to us, they can help us learn more about how flavors play a role in making tobacco products more attractive and addictive. Their participation also plays a huge role in providing lawmakers with important information regarding how and what flavors of e-cigarettes should be sold.
Very good. In the last few minutes that we have with you, Tricia, I wanted to circle back to tap your role as a community educator and give you the opportunity to talk to parents, educators, loved ones, confidants of younger people, and to talk a little bit about what these parents and guardians should be looking for if they suspect that a young person that they love is already using e-cigarettes or any tobacco product, and how they might be able to tap resources at Yale to help mitigate or quit.
Great. So unfortunately, it's pretty hard with these devices, as you had discussed earlier, being so discreet, and all over the internet shows these kids how they can hide vapes in different forms and fashions and the best way to vape and not get caught. So catching your child using is difficult. More importantly, that I stress continuously, is the education. And the constant discussion. It can't be, I know you're doing this, you have to stop. Because they may want to stop, and it's really difficult. Unfortunately, what a lot of people don't understand is that vaping, and especially these large doses of nicotine that are going into their systems, nicotine is a stimulant and it's highly addictive, and it affects their brain chemistry. So when someone gets addicted to nicotine, which they're susceptible to getting addicted to it up until they're 23 years old, once they start using regularly, it alters their brain chemistry and makes those receptors in their brain that cause you to be happy. It's normally a natural production of dopamine or that happy chemical. But when you vape regularly, your brain says something else is coming on board releasing this chemical. I don't have to keep releasing it at those same levels. So it slowly over time cuts back at what it naturally releases. So when these kids do say, okay, I don't want to do this anymore, I want to stop, they don't feel the way that they used to. The things that used to make them happy doesn't work anymore. And the only way they can start to feel normal again is by reintroducing nicotine into their system. And that's unfortunately how these addictions work. And it's very frustrating for kids because they don't like to think that they're addicted to anything and that they've lost control. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to ask for help. So I think the most important thing is just talk about it openly, understanding, and make it easy enough for your kids to say, Mom, I have tried and I do need help. Or if they're not comfortable saying that to you, offer them different venues or avenues that they can go down to find help. So although the website www.yalevapestudy.com is specifically for these adult studies, we do have teen studies as well. So if they call or text 203-605-5803 and they say that they're a teen that's interested in quitting, we can certainly direct them to the right resources that we have, because we also do have adolescent studies that we work with teens and help them quit vaping. Wow. And they get paid as well.
Well, that's a spectacular resource, and I'm glad we had a few seconds left to talk about that subject and provide that to anybody that's listening or checking out our podcast. Tricia, thank you so much. It's been a very, very enlightening few minutes with you today. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners, Tricia Dahl is a research assistant and psychiatry grand rounds coordinator, as well as a community educator on the dangers of vaping with the Yale School of Medicine Substance Abuse Center. For adults to get involved in the current study, they can go to yalevapestudy.com, or as you heard, you can text or call whether you want to get involved in one of the current adult studies, or if you're the parent or a young person who wants to kick the habit of e-cigarettes. You can text or call 203-605-5803. Tricia, thank you so much, and best of luck with your newest projects. Well, when last we spoke with Michelle Puzo, co-founder and president of UR Community Cares, back in 2009, she was just getting this whole idea rolling. And here we are now, a pandemic and a couple of years later, and the 501c3 nonprofit that she co-founded is now up and running and dedicated to helping older and physically disabled residents stay safe in their homes and maintain their quality of life with all kinds of services like household chores, yard work, transportation, and companionship visits, including grocery pickup and delivery. Michelle, I got to imagine all of those services were in high demand back during the COVID era, and probably attributed to your success in bringing UR Community Cares completely statewide here in Connecticut. How's things been going since you guys started ramping up back in 2019?
Yes, we know that there were many challenges over the last year and a half, and yourcommunitycares.org is the opportunity for those people that are in need to sign up to get help from free volunteers that can help with those categories that you mentioned. We know that there are many people with mobility issues that aren't able to do what they used to do in their homes, and it just provides a little bit of added support with neighbors helping neighbors across Connecticut.
So in the amount of time that you folks have been working to ramp up to go statewide, you've really amassed a healthy number of, background checked and secure volunteer experiences. Tell us a little bit about the kind of people that are coming to your community cares.
Sure. Yeah, we have, retired police chiefs, we have high school principals, we have many retired folks that want to give back. We have high school students that want to get community service. There's such a variety, and we have participants in over 100 towns now across Connecticut, and we're really excited to get the feedback from the community members that are receiving the help of the great volunteers that are coming to their house. They really feel they are benefiting from these experiences.
Well, we've heard from so many established nonprofits with long histories in a number of these 100 Connecticut towns that your community cares is now operating in, who are were maxed out. They had waiting lists. They didn't have the personnel or the programming capacity to necessarily meet demand at every turn for the people who are coming to them for support, assistance, and I got to imagine that your community cares really got a lot of traction during that amount of time because of the seniors and physically disabled residents who were homebound and they had such limited connections to the outside world. And I guess in a lot of ways, it was your volunteers who provided them not with just the lifeline of services, but maybe even in some cases, the more important social connection or interaction, even if it was across the front yard after dropping off groceries or after, cutting the grass or doing some kind of chore. Tell us a little bit about what you're hearing from your service recipient constituents.
Yeah, we definitely, the companionship part of this over the last year and a half has been huge. There were many people that were doing virtual deeds, so they would call people on a weekly basis, checking in with them, talking with them if they weren't doing in-home. Our organization offers that ability to offer virtual opportunities as well as drop-off of food pantry items or yard cleanups, whatever it might be. And we also have people that are moving after living in their house for 40-something years, and they have to box up their entire house and move. Our volunteers are also helping with those types of downsizing, moving that is occurring. It's just such a wide variety of chores. Some people are asking for help with food prep because they might be widowed now, and those tasks that the spouse used to do that they can't do for themselves. It's really a variety of tasks that we're asking volunteers to do, and having the collaboration with the Connecticut VOAD has really allowed us to increase the pool of volunteers that we have to be able to be across the state of Connecticut.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that partnership.
Yeah, the Connecticut VOAD is a combination of a lot of different partners across the state, FEMA and Food Share, and we try to come together to help in a variety of ways across the state, but specific to us, we were able to use some of the background checked volunteers that were interested in helping the population of people that we serve. And it's been a great partnership.
So what we haven't really mentioned yet is for people to that go to yourcommunitycares.org, that's yourcommunitycares.org, to volunteer, they know that they're providing their assistance. But what we really want to drive home is the point that thanks to the goodness of these volunteers, as well as kind donors and other partners, you're able to provide these services absolutely free. It really looks like the bulk of your overhead is really just keeping the website going and whatever administrative functions. Are one-on-one donors really your lifeblood, or are you at the point now where you've been able to acquire some underwriting partnerships, or are you poised to or looking to create those partnerships now that you're across more than half of the communities in Connecticut?
We would definitely love to increase partnerships across the state. We know that grants have been wonderful. We receive grants from the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, the Connecticut Community Foundation, many different grants across the state, and those go to direct programming costs. We are adding a new feature on our website so that community partners can be more visible on our website, and that will be great to have added donations so that we can hopefully grow to staff. We are 100% volunteer at this time, but we do, as we are growing, we do know that we will need staff and time. We also are in two town budgets. The town of Manchester and the town of Bolton have put us under their human services department, and that has allowed us to really expand our services in those towns. And in the town of Clinton, we are starting to expand with their Clinton Community Assistance Team, that their nonprofit Families Helping Families, People's Bank in Clinton, they've really come together to increase donations to cover the cost of the people in their town that are signing up. So we do have a lot of different success stories, towns that are doing, supporting us in different ways, and we're anxious to do that with more towns across the state.
Well, we normally sort of step off into the interview asking this question, but how did you and your co-founder get involved in all this? What was the background that brought you two together and made you decide that, you know, back in 2019, it was the right place and the right time to launch this kind of statewide hub for volunteer action?
Well, we are both UConn alumni. I'm a physical therapist. He's an entrepreneur, and I have 20 years of physical therapy experience, and I realize that there are so many people going into people's homes. Really opened my eyes to the fact that the aging population of people, not everyone can pay for private services, and as more and more people are living to 80, 90, 100. They haven't financially planned to live to that age. And so I thought, what if neighbors were able to connect to neighbors, offer a free platform for people to connect to one another? And that's where MD Birmingham, our co-founder, helped create the platform with the web developer of yourcommunitycares.org. And we realized that, you know, this is a Connecticut problem. This is a United States problem. This is a global problem. As people are aging and living longer, having less ability to pay for help, we thought it would be great to help connect neighbors to neighbors.
And the volunteers that are coming to your site are, you know, their eyes are wide open. They have to go through a background check. That helps to make your clients and recipients feel very safe and secure, no matter who it is that's showing up to do the assigned chore. Tell us a little bit about that qualifying experience for somebody who's hearing this show and says, hey, that's the place for me. Hopefully I'll be able to start generating some volunteer assistance to people who need it most right here in my neighborhood, right here in my community. So when people go to communitycares.org to learn more about the organization. Tell us more about what their experience is going to be between when they sign on with interest to volunteer and they make contact with their first volunteer recipient.
Sure. When they go to sign up on the website, they will enter in their demographic information. We will then do a background check, which is the 7 years of state and federal, and then we will send them an email letting them know they've been accepted, hopefully, to the platform. And once they've been accepted, they can then log into the website, yourcommunitycares.org, and they will see all the volunteer opportunities that are available in their town. Then they can go outside of town up to 15 miles. If there was nothing in their town, they could then search for opportunities outside of their town. And that's all done on the website where they can then, you know, accept the community deed. That's the task that they're going to do at someone's house. And then they'll go back in after the deed has been completed. They'll go in and do a testimonial and a rating so that we know on the back end what has occurred during the volunteer experience.
Okay. And how long typically do people need to wait between the time they assign themselves and go through the application process and they're approved and they're heading out to their first volunteer opportunity through your community cares?
The sign-up process with the background check takes about 48, sometimes 72 hours. It depends on how many states they've lived in the past. It depends on if it was a weekend. But then they can go in and sign up right away and accept a deed if it was available that next day.
So if they're hearing if they're hearing this show on a Sunday morning or they're hearing the podcast Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, they can go to urcommunitycares.org, get started, get applied, and potentially be volunteering as early as the next weekend.
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of the volunteers pick the category. So if they're only interested in transportation, then they would just pick transportation. If they were only interested in yard work, they pick the category, and it makes it really convenient for the volunteers to go in and just accept the appointments that they're able to do. They're not required to just show up somewhere at a certain time. They go in and they pick the appointments. And that's why we've really tried to make it town by town to make it convenient. They're not having to drive far away. They're making a difference and impact in their own community, in their own town.
Excellent. Well, we know we sadly missed the big cornhole tournament last weekend. I'm hoping it went well, and I'm wondering if you guys have any other kind of more broad community building or fundraising events that are scheduled into the fall.
Well, we did have a really great event with over 100 people in the event. So it was a great success, and we're looking to do other fundraising events like that cornhole event. So if any restaurant would like to host a fundraiser with us on our behalf, we're looking for other restaurants that might give 10% of the proceeds of that day. We've done a lot of those lately where restaurants want to help give back as we're moving forward. We're hopefully going to do another cornhole event in the fall.
Excellent.
And more details to come on those events.
Fantastic. Michelle Puzo is co-founder and president of Your Community Cares. That's urcommunitycares.org. If you're checking them out online or you're interested in either signing up for volunteer services or donating volunteer services, they are there to help. They're a nonprofit 501c3 dedicated to helping older and physically disabled residents stay safe in their homes and maintain a quality of life. Maybe you can do some household chores, yard work, transportation, companionship visits, grocery pickup or delivery. Sky's the limit based on anything you're willing to do that their recipients are asking for. urcommunitycares.org is the organization. And Michelle, we thank you for joining us today and for the great work and success that you've had in just a few short years since you started this nonprofit here in Connecticut. Best of luck, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.